Welcome back to Meteorology Matters. Make sure you're following Rob Jones on all the socials, Instagram, meteorologist, TikTok, TV meteorologist, and on YouTube, follow Rob Jones Hurricane, where you can also find the Meteorology Matters playlist. Today, we're diving into a topic that's both visually stunning and surprisingly controversial, the practice of dyeing rivers green, particularly for St. Patrick's Day celebrations.
It's a fascinating blend of culture, science, and environmental awareness.
You know, you see those pictures of the Chicago River transformed into this vibrant emerald green, and it's undeniably striking. But it also makes you wonder, what exactly are they using, and is it truly safe for the ecosystem? What's the story behind this tradition?
Well, the origins go back to 1962, and it actually started with a bit of a serendipitous discovery. They were using fluorescein dye to trace leaks in the river, and it stained a worker's clothes green, sparking the idea for a citywide spectacle.
So a happy accident turned into a St. Patrick's Day tradition. But hold on, didn't they eventually switch dyes?
Yes, because as research progressed, scientists realized that fluorescein wasn't exactly eco-friendly. It was found to be particularly harmful to mollusks and snails.
Okay, so what did they replace it with? Something safer, I hope?
In 1966, they switched to a vegetable-based powder, which they claim is non-toxic. But you've hit on a crucial point. Even if a dye is deemed safe on its own, intentionally adding anything to a natural waterway raises questions about our impact on the environment.
Right. It's like saying, well, this one thing might be okay, so what's the harm? But it's a much bigger issue than that, isn't it?
It is. Some critics argue that dyeing the river green, however visually appealing, reinforces the idea that we can manipulate nature for our own entertainment. It might even subtly encourage a disregard for environmental responsibility, as if we're saying it's already altered, so why bother being careful?
It's almost like the vibrant green masks, the potential issues the river might already be facing.
Precisely. And it's particularly significant considering the Chicago River's unique history. It's a heavily engineered waterway. Its flow was actually reversed back in 1900 for sanitation purposes. So adding dye further blurs the lines between a natural river and controlled channel.
And to add fuel to the fire, the exact formula of the dye used in Chicago remains a closely guarded secret. It's a decision made by the city and the plumbers union involved.
That secrecy naturally leads to speculation and distrust. After all, if it's truly harmless, why not be transparent? It's interesting to contrast that with Tampa, Florida, where they also dye the Hillsborough River green. They openly disclose the manufacturer, Bright Dyes, who, of course, maintain that their product meets all safety standards.
So is that reassuring, or does it raise even more questions?
It's a mixed bag. While transparency is a good step, some environmental groups argue that no matter the manufacturer, we should be erring on the side of caution. The long-term impact of repeatedly introducing dyes into an ecosystem is still being studied and debated.
Makes you think. Are we truly considering the potential consequences, or are we letting the appeal of tradition overshadow environmental concerns?
That's a question worth pondering. And to complicate matters further, we're learning more and more about how interconnected our actions are with the health of ecosystems.
Okay, let's explore that a bit. What are some of the specific concerns about the impact of this tradition on the Chicago River?
Well, in 2022, there was a significant event where heavy rainfall overwhelmed the sewage system, causing untreated wastewater to flow into the river. This led to a severe depletion of oxygen, forcing fish to flee to other areas.
Well, that sounds serious.
It was. And it highlights the vulnerability of the river's ecosystem. Imagine you're a fish already dealing with pollution, and then suddenly your habitat is flooded with sewage A and D turned bright green. It really emphasizes the need for careful consideration of the cumulative impact of all these factors.
But does the dye itself directly affect the fish? Has there been any research on that?
There actually has. Last year, a team from the Shedd Aquarium and Purdue University conducted a study using acoustic tags to track the movements of 80 fish in the Chicago River system.
So what did they find? Did the fish freak out when the green dye appeared?
Surprisingly, no. Their research showed no evidence of the fish being agitated or negatively impacted by the dye. They basically swam through it as if it were just another part of their environment.
That's interesting. But I guess that doesn't necessarily mean it's harmless in the long run, right?
Exactly. The researchers were quick to point out that this was just one study and more research is needed to fully understand the potential long-term effects. They compared the fish's behavior during the dyeing to their behavior during the sewage overflow event in July of that same year.
And how did they react to the sewage?
They showed clear signs of distress, frantically searching for areas with higher oxygen levels. So At least in terms of immediate impact, the die seems less concerning than some of the other challenges the river faces.
It's like a reminder that while the die is a highly visible issue, it's only one piece of the puzzle when it comes to the overall health of the river.
Precisely. And environmental groups argue that the symbolism of dying the river can't be ignored, especially considering its history.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about those symbolic implications.
The Chicago River has a long and troubled history of pollution. It was once so contaminated that it earned the nickname Bubbly Creek due to the gases released from decomposing sewage and industrial waste.
Bubbly Creek, that's not a very appealing image.
Not at all. It took decades of effort and massive investment to clean up the river and improve its water quality. Today, it's home to over 80 species of fish, along with birds, turtles, even beavers.
Wow, that's remarkable considering its past.
It is, and that's precisely why some environmental groups find the act of dying the river so concerning. They argue that it trivializes the issue of pollution and reinforces the idea that we can just manipulate nature for our own amusement without any real consequences.
They're worried it sends a message that undermines the progress that's been made.
That's their perspective. Their argument is that instead of celebrating with a potentially harmful act, we should be focusing on promoting responsible stewardship and ensuring the river's long-term well-being.
It's a complex issue for sure. On one hand, you have a tradition that brings people together and is seen by many as a harmless celebration of Irish heritage. On the other, you have these valid concerns about the environmental impact and the message it sends.
And it's further complicated by the lack of transparency surrounding the die formula, which only fuels speculation and distrust. It's a bit like that incident with Mountain Dew back in 2023.
What happened with Mountain Dew?
Do you remember how people on social media tried to turn the river green by dumping in gallons of Mountain Dew?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Well, it turns out Mountain Dew contains a yellow dye, and when mixed with the river's natural blue-green hue, it created a rather unsightly murky color.
And it highlighted the fact that even substances we generally consider safe can have unintended consequences when introduced into a natural environment.
Precisely. It took the city days to flush out the Mountain Dew and restore the river's natural color, a valuable lesson in unintended consequences.
So we've touched on the environmental concerns and the symbolism associated with dyeing the Chicago River green. But this tradition has been going strong for over six decades. It must hold a powerful significance for many people.
Absolutely. And the first time it happened was actually an accident. Back in 1961, plumbers were using fluorescein to detect leaks in the river.
Wait, did someone's clothes turn green again?
Not this time. It was the plumbing union leader Stephen Bailey who noticed a worker's overalls stained green. This sparked the idea of dyeing the entire river for St. Patrick's Day the following year.
So in 1962, they went all out and dumped a massive amount of dye into the river.
100 pounds of it, to be exact.
Yeah.
Of course, back then, awareness about the potential environmental impacts of fluorescein was much lower. The focus was on creating a visual spectacle for the holiday.
I bet it was quite a sight.
I'm sure it was. And it instantly captured the city's imagination, becoming an annual tradition. In fact, Mayor Richard J. Daley was so enthusiastic about the idea that he initially wanted to dye Lake Michigan green.
Dye Lake Michigan. That's ambitious, to say the least.
Thankfully, others persuaded him that dyeing the river was sufficient.
So this tradition has very deep roots in Chicago's history and culture.
It does. And for many Chicagoans, it's a beloved part of their St. Patrick's Day celebrations.
But as we've discussed, there's also a growing awareness of the potential consequences for the environment, leading to this important question. Should this tradition continue in its current form?
Exactly. It's a conversation that requires us to weigh tradition against environmental responsibility, and perhaps to consider whether there might be alternative ways to celebrate that are both festive and sustainable.
That's an intriguing thought. What are some of those potential alternative approaches?
Well, one option is to shift the focus to events and activities that don't involve altering the natural environment. Think parades, festivals, cultural performances, even educational exhibits about Irish heritage.
So it's about finding ways to celebrate that don't involve manipulating the river itself.
Exactly. Another approach could be to embrace green symbolism without relying on dyes or chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine encouraging people to wear green, decorating homes and businesses with green lights, or even organizing community cleanup events along the riverbanks as a way to mark the occasion.
It's about expressing that festive spirit while also demonstrating a commitment to environmental stewardship.
Precisely. And there are even some exciting developments in technology that might offer more eco-friendly alternatives to traditional dyes. For example, some companies are working on biodegradable plant-based dyes that could temporarily color water without harming aquatic life.
That's encouraging. So maybe we don't have to choose between a visually striking celebration and environmental responsibility.
It's a possibility. Of course, even with these newer dyes, thorough testing would be crucial to ensure their safety before widespread use.
Absolutely. And even if we find a perfectly safe biodegradable dye, the act of intentionally altering a natural waterway still prompts us to examine our relationship with nature. Are we truly respecting its inherent value, or are we simply imposing our will upon it?
That's a key point. Ultimately, the decision of whether or not to continue this tradition is a complex one. It involves weighing cultural traditions, environmental responsibility, and our own values.
It's a conversation that demands careful consideration and a willingness to listen to all sides.
I agree. And this conversation is happening not just in Chicago, but in other cities around the world that have adopted similar practices.
So let's broaden our perspective and see how other cities are approaching this issue. You mentioned Tampa, Florida earlier. They also dye the Hillsborough River green, right?
They do. And unlike Chicago, Tampa is quite transparent about the dye they use. They openly share that they work with a company called Bright Dyes, which claims to meet all the necessary safety standards.
But are they facing similar pushback from environmental groups?
Indeed, they are. Even with those assurances, some people argue that dyeing the river is simply unnecessary and potentially harmful, regardless of the dye's safety claims.
Can you give us some specific examples of the concerns being raised in Tampa?
In 2022, a local charter captain started a petition to stop the city from dyeing the Hillsborough River green.
A petition? That sounds like there's a significant level of opposition to the practice there.
There is. The petition gathered over 7,300 signatures, highlighting concerns about the potential impact of the dye on the river's ecosystem.
What were some of the key arguments made in the petition?
One of the main points was that the Hillsborough River is already grappling with several environmental challenges, including pollution from stormwater runoff and wastewater treatment plants.
So their argument is that adding dye, even if it's considered safe, could put even more stress on an already vulnerable ecosystem.
Exactly. The petition also pointed out that the Hillsborough River is a source of drinking water for Tampa. While the city insists the dye is non-toxic, some residents remain skeptical.
It's understandable that people would be concerned about their drinking water, even if the risks are considered low.
Absolutely. And it raises questions about the trade-offs we're willing to make for the sake of tradition.
So how did the city of Tampa respond to the petition and the concerns raised by residents?
They defended their decision to continue the tradition, arguing that it's harmless and brings the community together. They pointed to the fact that the Environmental Protection Commission of Hillsborough County had reviewed the dye's safety data sheet and had no objections to its use.
So they're relying on the assurances from regulatory agencies that the dye is safe.
That's right. And they're emphasizing the cultural significance of the tradition to the community.
It's fascinating to see how this debate plays out in different cities. There are varying levels of transparency and different perspectives on balancing tradition and environmental responsibility.
It really highlights the need for ongoing dialogue and careful consideration of all the factors involved.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this first part of our conversation. We've explored the history of dyeing rivers green, delved into the science behind the dyes used, and examined the environmental concerns and cultural perspectives surrounding this tradition.
It's been a thought-provoking discussion so far.
I agree. And in the next part of our Meteorology Matters, we'll take a deeper dive into the specific arguments for and against this tradition. We'll examine the ethical considerations, economic implications, and the role of public opinion in shaping policy decisions.
I look forward to continuing our exploration.
Me too. So stay tuned for part two of Meteorology Matters as we further explore the complexities of dyeing rivers green. In the meantime, we encourage you to do your own research, form your own opinions, and share your thoughts with us on social media.
We'd love to hear from you.
And as always, don't forget to check out Rob Jones on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube for more insights on weather, the environment, and everything in between.
Until next time.
Welcome back to Meteorology Matters. We're continuing our exploration of dyeing rivers green, a tradition that sparked quite a debate, particularly when it comes to its environmental impact.
It's a topic that intersects culture, science, and our responsibility to the natural world, which makes for a truly engaging discussion.
Before we went to commercial, we talked about the history of this practice and some of the environmental concerns. Now, let's dig into the heart of the matter. Is dyeing rivers green for celebrations like St. Patrick's Day truly an environmentally responsible practice?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And as with many complex issues, there are strong arguments on both sides.
All right, let's start with those who support this tradition. What are some of their key arguments?
One of the most common arguments you'll hear is that it's simply a harmless and fun way to celebrate a cultural holiday. It creates a visual spectacle that brings people together and fosters a sense of community.
It's like turning the river into a centerpiece for a citywide party.
Exactly. And for many, it's a beloved tradition that evokes fond memories and a sense of cultural pride.
Especially in cities like Chicago, where Irish heritage is so deeply intertwined with the city's identity.
Precisely. Supporters also emphasize that the dyes used today are, in their view, environmentally friendly and pose no significant risk to aquatic life.
They often point to the fact that organizations like the Environmental Protection Agency have approved the use of these dyes, right?
That's correct. And they stress that the dyeing process is temporary, with the river typically returning to its natural color within a matter of days.
So their perspective is that it's a short-lived event with minimal lasting environmental impact.
Exactly. They also bring up the economic benefits, pointing to increased tourism and revenue for local businesses. In their view, these benefits outweigh any potential environmental concerns.
It's a balancing act, weighing the cultural and economic value against any perceived environmental risks.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's a complex equation with many variables.
Okay, so we've heard the case for continuing this tradition. Now let's turn our attention to the counterarguments. Why are some people so vehemently opposed to dyeing rivers green?
For many environmental advocates, it boils down to a matter of principle. We shouldn't be intentionally altering natural waterways for our own amusement, regardless of the perceived harmlessness of the act. They argue that it sets a dangerous precedent and could encourage a more casual attitude towards pollution in general.
It's like saying, well, we're already doing this one thing, so what's the harm in a little bit of this or that? A slippery slope, so to speak.
Exactly. Opponents also emphasize that even dyes considered safe can have unintended consequences for the delicate balance of an ecosystem. We simply don't fully understand the long-term effects of repeatedly introducing these substances into natural waterways.
It makes me think of all the times we've learned, often too late, that what we thought was harmless actually had a detrimental impact on the environment or wildlife.
That's a valid point. And it's crucial to remember that many rivers are already facing significant challenges from pollution, habitat loss, and the impacts of climate change. Adding dyes to the equation, even temporarily, could exacerbate those stressors.
It's like piling on when the ecosystem is already struggling.
A good analogy. And some critics also raise concerns about the lack of transparency surrounding the dyes used in certain cities, particularly in Chicago. The fact that the exact formula is kept secret only adds to the distrust and makes it difficult to have an open and honest assessment of the potential risks.
It raises questions about accountability and whether the public is truly being informed about the potential impacts of this practice. Transparency is key, especially when dealing with a sensitive ecosystem.
Absolutely. It's about building trust and ensuring that decisions are made with the best interests of both the community and the environment in mind.
So it seems like this debate goes beyond just the safety of the dyes themselves. It touches upon our fundamental relationship with nature and whether we see ourselves as stewards of the environment or as those who can manipulate it for our own purposes.
That's a very insightful observation. It's a philosophical debate as much as it is a scientific one.
And it's all happening within the context of growing global awareness of the environmental challenges we face, from climate change to biodiversity loss.
Absolutely. As we grapple with these complex and urgent issues, we're being forced to reassess our priorities and consider the long-term ramifications of our actions, even those that seem harmless on the surface.
And in the case of dyeing rivers green, it raises the question, can this tradition coexist with our aspirations for a more sustainable future? Is there a way to reconcile the two?
That's the ultimate challenge, isn't it? To find that balance between cultural expression and environmental responsibility.
So with all these competing arguments, how do cities ultimately make decisions about whether or not to continue this practice? What factors come into play?
It's a multifaceted process that involves weighing a variety of considerations, from public opinion and cultural significance to economic implications and environmental concerns. There's no one-size-fits-all answer.
It sounds more like navigating a complex web of interconnected factors than solving a simple equation.
That's an accurate way to describe it. In some cases, public pressure has led cities to reconsider the practice or at least implement changes to mitigate potential harm.
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, we talked about the petition in Tampa earlier. While it didn't stop the tradition altogether, it did prompt the city to make some adjustments, like reducing the amount of dye used and increasing monitoring of the river's water quality after the event.
So even if a city doesn't completely abandon the tradition, there's room for compromise and finding ways to reduce the environmental impact.
Exactly. It's about finding that middle ground where cultural expression and environmental stewardship can coexist. And in other instances, cities have faced legal challenges from environmental groups seeking to halt the practice entirely.
So it can become a legal battle as much as a public debate.
That's right. And the decisions made by cities often reflect the unique political and cultural landscape of each community. What works in one city may not work in another.
It highlights the need for localized solutions and for taking into account the specific needs and values of each community.
I agree. And it's important to remember that this is an ongoing conversation. As we continue to learn about the intricacies of ecosystems and the long-term consequences of our actions, our perspectives and policies will likely continue to evolve. What's considered acceptable today may not be seen the same way in the future.
It's a reminder that we're all part of this process and our voices and choices matter.
Absolutely. By staying informed, engaging in thoughtful discussions, and advocating for responsible practices, we can help shape a future where cultural traditions and environmental stewardship go hand in hand.
So we've explored the arguments for and against dyeing rivers green for St. Patrick's Day. We've seen how this tradition is being debated and reevaluated in different cities around the world. It's clearly a complex issue without a simple answer.
It's a reminder that even seemingly straightforward traditions can have layers of complexity when examined through different lenses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But by examining those different perspectives and appreciating the broader context, we can form our own informed opinions about whether traditions like this should continue, and if so, how they can be adapted to minimize any potential harm to the environment.
That's a great way to frame it. It's about finding that balance, that sweet spot where cultural expression and environmental respect can coexist.
So as we wrap up this part of our Meteorology Matters into Dying Rivers Green, what are some key questions for our listeners to ponder as they continue to engage with this issue?
Well, I think a fundamental question is, what does St. Patrick's Day truly represent, and how can we celebrate it in a way that aligns with our values, both culturally and environmentally?
It's about looking beyond the surface and reflecting on the deeper meaning and significance of the holiday.
Exactly. And another crucial question to consider is, how can we reconcile our desire to celebrate and connect with nature with our responsibility to protect it? How can we ensure that our actions don't undermine the very ecosystems we're trying to celebrate?
It's about finding that balance between celebration and stewardship.
Precisely. And I think it's also important to ask ourselves, how can we engage in productive conversations about these complex issues, listening to different perspectives, and working together to find solutions that benefit both people and the planet?
It's about recognizing that we're all stakeholders in this discussion, and that the best solutions often emerge from collaboration and a willingness to consider different viewpoints.
I couldn't agree more. By approaching these conversations with respect, open-mindedness, and a desire to find common ground, we can create a more sustainable and harmonious relationship with our environment.
Those are certainly thought-provoking questions for our listeners to consider as we move forward in this discussion. And in the next part of our episode, we'll hear from a variety of voices on this issue, including environmental activists, cultural historians, and everyday citizens who are grappling with the complexities of this tradition.
I look forward to hearing those diverse perspectives.
Me too. So stay tuned for part 3 of Meteorology Matters as we continue our exploration of dying rivers green. Welcome back to Meteorology Matters. We've been exploring the practice of dyeing rivers green, delving into the history, science, and the diverse viewpoints surrounding this tradition, especially its connection to St. Patrick's Day celebrations.
It's a topic that brings up fascinating questions about our relationship with nature and how we balance cultural expression with environmental responsibility.
In the previous parts, we examined the arguments for and against this practice and saw how cities are approaching it differently. Now, in this final segment, we want to shift our focus to the human element of this debate. We'll hear from individuals with strong opinions on both sides, those who cherish it as a symbol of heritage, and those who view it as an act of environmental disregard.
We'll also gain insights from experts who can provide a historical context and help us understand the evolving relationship between humans and our waterways.
Let's start by hearing from Jack Darren, the director of the Sierra Club's Illinois chapter. He's been a vocal critic of dyeing the Chicago River green, arguing that it sends a conflicting message about our responsibility to protect the environment. So, here's Jack.
Yeah, okay.
What message are we sending when we intentionally alter a natural waterway just for our own entertainment. The Chicago River has made incredible strides since the days when it was so polluted they literally reversed its flow to move it away from the city. We've invested billions of dollars in cleaning it up, and it's now a thriving ecosystem, supporting diverse fish and wildlife. But when we dye it green, it's as if we're saying it's okay to treat it as a dumping ground, even if it's just for one day. It feels like we're undermining all the progress we've made and sending the signal that we don't really value the river for what it is, a vital natural resource that deserves our protection. Darren's perspective really gets to the heart of the matter, doesn't it? He raises the concern that even a seemingly harmless action can send the message that contradicts our efforts to restore and protect our rivers.
His viewpoint reflects a sentiment that's gaining momentum among environmental advocates. Hmm. They're urging us to align our actions, even those rooted in tradition, with a deeper commitment to environmental stewardship.
It's a call to be more mindful of the unintended consequences of our actions and to consider the long-term impact on the ecosystems we're a part of. Now let's hear a contrasting perspective from Margaret McGarry, a lifelong Chicago resident and a proud Irish American. For her, the tradition holds a deep personal and cultural significance.
All right,
Margaret. Dyeing the Chicago River green, it's not just a pretty sight for me. It's a symbol of our city's vibrant Irish heritage, a way to honor our ancestors and celebrate our culture. My grandparents immigrated to Chicago from Ireland in the early 1900s, and they worked tirelessly to build a life for themselves and their family. They faced their share of discrimination and hardship, but they never lost their pride in their Irish roots. And for them, as for so many other Irish immigrants, the St. Patrick's Day parade and the dyeing of the river were a way to connect with their community, to feel a sense of belonging, and to proudly share their heritage with the world. It's a tradition passed down through generations, and it holds a special place in the hearts of people like me. McGarry's words are a powerful reminder that cultural traditions are more than just events. They represent a shared history, a sense of identity, and a connection to something larger than ourselves.
Her perspective highlights the human element of this debate and reminds us that it's not just about science and environmental impact, but also about people, their stories, and their sense of belonging.
It underscores the complexity of finding solutions that respect both cultural heritage and environmental sustainability.
Absolutely. Now let's bring in a historical perspective to shed light on the evolving relationship between humans and rivers, especially in urban environments. We have with us Dr. Catherine O'Reilly, a professor of environmental history at Northwestern University. Dr. O'Reilly, can you tell us a bit about how that relationship has changed over time?
Dr. O'Reilly, welcome to Meteorology Matters.
Yes, welcome.
Rivers have always been essential to human civilization, serving as sources of water, transportation, and life itself. But as cities grew and industries developed, rivers often became convenient dumping grounds for waste and pollution. The Chicago River, as you've discussed, is a classic example of this transformation. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, it was so polluted with sewage and industrial waste that it was a serious health hazard. Reversing the flow of the river to send its polluted waters away from the city and toward the Mississippi River was a drastic measure, but it was seen as necessary at the time. This decision reflects a mindset that prevailed for decades, a view of rivers as disposable resources that could be engineered and manipulated to meet human needs without considering the long-term consequences. Thankfully, in recent decades, there's been a growing recognition that rivers are not merely utilitarian channels, but vital ecosystems that provide essential services, filtering pollutants, supporting biodiversity, and enhancing the quality of life for everyone. The movement to restore urban rivers, like the Chicago River, reflects a shift in our understanding, a realization that human and natural systems are interconnected and that we can't thrive without healthy, functioning ecosystems. Dr. O'Reilly's insights are so valuable. They remind us that our understanding of rivers has evolved significantly. We've gone from viewing them as dumping grounds to recognizing their ecological importance and the need to protect them.
And it seems like the debate over dyeing rivers green is, in a way, a microcosm of that evolving understanding. We're now at a point where we're trying to reconcile our desire to celebrate and connect with nature with the responsibility to ensure its well-being.
It's a tension that will likely continue to shape our approach to rivers and other natural resources in the years to come.
I agree. So as we conclude our deep dive into the green river phenomenon, what are some key takeaways you hope our listeners will reflect on?
Well, first and foremost, I think this discussion highlights that there are no easy answers when it comes to balancing cultural traditions with environmental considerations. It's a nuanced issue with valid points on both sides.
It's not about right versus wrong, but about finding a way to honor our cultural heritage while also being mindful of our impact on the environment.
And it's a reminder that even seemingly small actions like dyeing a river green can have symbolic significance and spark important conversations about our relationship with nature.
It's about acknowledging the interconnectedness of human actions and environmental consequences.
Exactly. As we move forward, it's essential to approach these discussions with curiosity, a willingness to listen to diverse perspectives, and a commitment to finding solutions that benefit both people and the planet. What are your final thoughts for our listeners?
I encourage everyone to continue exploring this topic, engaging with different viewpoints, and considering how their own actions can contribute to a more sustainable future.
That's a great call to action. Remember, you can find more insights on weather, the environment, and everything in between by following Rob Jones on Instagram, meteorologist, on TikTok, TV meteorologist, and on YouTube, Rob Jones Hurricane, where you'll also find the Meteorology Matters playlist. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Meteorology Matters.
Until next time, stay curious.